Asian woman, you have got incredible experience, not to mention your expertise in media, you know, to just be a listening ear and share the privilege, you know, that I have in being able to do the Artslandia podcast. It's a good thing for me.
Well, I applaud you for keeping on going with it. And, mm-hmm. you know, I always wonder how long I'm going to keep doing it, to tell you the truth. But you know, I always find it's interesting to get insights. You know, just hearing you ask questions to Margaret Cho
uh-huh.
is different
right.
than, you know, what I was thinking
uh-huh.
of asking her. And I think that's what we need to have more of, is to have, you know, maybe we need to partner more. But it's just, there's a freshness to it.
I completely agree.
You know, just the same old,
right? Right?
And to look at things a different way, especially yeah. when you're talking to somebody else about their work.
Right, and every artist has some interesting piece and that it just kind of opens me up a little bit more. I think, oh, okay, wow.
I mean, and also just doing these interviews are also my form of social justice too, you
right.
know, in the project that you choose to feature, you mm-hmm. know?
Yes.
What, you know, how can you make the world a better place?
Yes.
You know, by doing that.
Right.
Right. And mm-hmm. so I think every component of whatever guest that I book has to have that angle to it.
Yeah, I agree.
You know? So that's it for Stage and Studio. And I'll have the show online at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio, as well as on iTunes. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
Hey, I'm Susanna Mars. Thanks for listening to Adventures in Artslandia. Talk to you soon.
Coming up next on KBOO on Art Focus, they talk to Glenn Clevenger and Anne Hamilton about their paintings and sculpture on view now in Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Mountain Valley Jazz Festival on Saturday and Sunday, August 18th and 19th at Portland Metro Arts in Portland. Now in its fifth year, the Mountain Valley Jazz Festival showcases original jazz from Portland's eccentric and vibrant jazz scene. Performers this year include Randy Porter Trio with Nancy King, Nicole Govner Quartet, Farnell Newton, the Creative Music Guild, Sound Fundry, and many more. Again, the Montevella Jazz Festival is on Saturday and Sunday, August 18th and 19th at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Glenn Clevenger. His show, Five Invented Seascapes, is on now at the Russo Lee Gallery through September the 1st. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Glenn.
Thank you, Joseph. Thank you for having me here.
So you're known as an abstract painter, but these five canvases are seascapes, basically, landscape, seascape, and they're invented. So just tell us, Where did you go and what brought on this change from abstraction?
A little over a year ago, a friend of mine offered me her house and studio at the beach for a month.
Mm-hmm.
And
where
about? Manzanita. I hadn't been to the coast in a while, and I thought I need to take a little break from the city. So
mm-hmm.
I threw some canvases in the car and my paints, and I went down and painted these paintings there.
So you had a month, you brought the supplies with you. Did you have a studio or was it?
There was a studio there that I had the
yeah.
use of.
Did it have a view?
It did have a view. It had a very lovely view.
And then were you going out in plein air, you know, were you going out to paint?
These were all painted in the studio. In like early morning or late in the evening, but I would spend the day walking on the coast, on the beach, or
yeah.
Driving up and down the coast and just taking in the landscape.
Did you have a sketchbook?
No sketchbook.
Just your eyes?
Just my eyes.
And your iPhone?
And I have a camera on my iPhone.
Okay, so as a process, it was go out and look and then come home and work on one painting? Or
well, that the story behind how these... I took six canvases with me, but there are five seascapes that ended up. The first painting, I started the paint while I was there, was one of my abstract paintings. And those take time for me. I have to really, I get into myself and I get into the paintings when I paint these, and they're going to take a lot of time. And
Weeks?
Longer than that. Longer, yeah, it could take years for me to finish one. And I thought, what am I doing with, I've got a month here at the beach. And that was the thing. I'm in a new space, new light, new landscape. And I thought, let's do something different. Let's just enjoy the view sort mm-hmm. of thing. So I started painting these seascapes, the mm-hmm. Things that I've seen during the day, recollections of from views, from viewpoints, or just from the beach.
So there are five of them in Russo Lee. It's that part of the gallery where you go in up the stairs, turn right, and there's
a little gallery,
medium-sized room. So there's five, and then in clockwise order, the first one is Viewpoint Old Cedar. So this is a tree with a couple of sort of arm-like branches, and then behind that there is some headlands, some kind of roiling sea. It's very pale blue. The rocks in the foreground are bright purple. There's green. So you're using these vivid colors, but kind of sparingly on a bluey gray seascape. Now that's a real place?
No, you've probably seen places like that, mm-hmm. but it's all from my imagination, and I play with color and composition in these paintings. Is I guess basically what breaks down to is just making a nice composition on a canvas, and color, whether in my abstract paintings or in these invented seascapes, are typical of my color palette, no matter what. So. Mm-hmm.
The next one is called Calm Passage, and it's cliffs and then a yellow sea, basically. It's a very yellow sea,
yeah.
A quite yellow sky. The cliffs are green and fading into the background. It's a lot more abstract in the sense that these are massive forms, and they're quite simple. There's maybe four or five shapes on the canvas.
Correct. Yeah, I must say that the old cedar painting, that was the last of the five paintings I did, and this the Calm Passage one, I think, was the first or second
okay.
second
so you
one
were kind
I
of
did.
In abstract so, mode at
so
this point.
At that point, yeah,
right.
And I
so
was.
What is the battle in your head when you're working? You're kind of using your abstract painter muscles, but you're envisaging things that people can, you know, recognize.
Mixing up the natural world, I guess, in these paintings. A yellow sky or a yellow sea is something you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's a post-apocalyptic landscape, maybe, but mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking about that when I was painting them. I was just allowing myself to use color where I wanted to use color. And
Another one is called Peaceful Inlet, which is a very steep cliff on one side, and then a black form. I guess it's another cliff, but another headland very close to the viewer. And the sky is sort of pink and the sea is blue, light blue.
Yeah, when I was painting these paintings, I was also thinking about Oregon painters that I knew that at one time in their career had painted seascapes, or specifically seascapes. And this painting, I was thinking about Louis Bunce, and the pink sky. The color of that pink is something that I remember Louis using in a lot of his modernist paintings.
Mm-hmm. And, you were a student of his.
A student, a friend, he was a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
We traveled sometimes.
Oh,
and,
really?
And I met him in New York on my first trip to New York ever,
right.
And he showed me. It was great.
Right.
It was great.
How does that work? I mean, when you're directly influenced by somebody because you know them and you admire them, What does it feel like to take his pink and put it in your sky?
There's a closeness, I think, that brings me back to memories of Louis I had, and sort of touching.
So you're not following any kind of academic rule in your head. You're sort of thinking about the person,
right? And even the brushstroke in the sky is, as I've seen that a lot in Louis's paintings. So it's a
how would you describe that brushstroke?
Well, it's all color on color. It's the brushstroke, feathery, would be I think a good word for that.
Yeah. So these are all acrylics.
These are all acrylic.
Were they, you know, was it easy to do? Was it an actual studio or just somebody's?
No, it was an actual studio. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's odd to go into somebody else's studio and do some work, but
was that a painter's studio?
It was a painter's studio. Okay. Yeah, she was off on a residency elsewhere, right. And so she offered me her place at the beach, and so
that's nice. Sounds like the perfect kind of artistic getaway.
It was very comfortable. Yeah.
What about, how did you go out and look at the landscape? How did you get around?
Physically get around? Mm-hmm. Just walking mostly. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of walking there. And but you know, I sort of grew up on the coast too. I have memories of certain parts of the coast. Mm-hmm. And then
which parts?
My grandparents retired in Lincoln City in 1960, and as kids we used to go down there and spend summers. And then I lived in Lincoln City a little bit after art school for a couple of years, and lived and worked there, and came back to Portland.
What was the work?
I was a line cook to start with at the Inn at Spanish Head, and then before I left, I was the office manager and auditor.
Nice.
So.
And when you were on this break, did you just stick to the coast, or did you go inland?
No. It was all. I decided I was going to do these seascape paintings, and it was all coastal. And I remember it rained almost every day that month when I was there.
What month was it?
That was March.
Oh dear.
And so.
But well, you got a lot of color in.
I got these. I wasn't. I changed my weather.
Yeah, right. Well, the cove, which is all green, basically, it's kind of mint green.
Yeah.
It's a cove. They're all seen from high up, you know, looking down on the sea.
It's very impressive. I think it's driving around. Neocone Mountain, Oswald West State Park. Mm-hmm. There are great views of up and down the coast from up there, and you get the most incredible scenes.
Mm-hmm. So this is a cove. The ocean looks sort of, you know, like you're trying to portray it as deeper and wilder in the cove, or it might be...
Stylized, I guess, would be a stylized wave or movement of water.
Mm-hmm. So each one seems to have its own palette. So how did you hit upon green for this one?
I guess thinking of the ocean as, I guess in a poetic way, as the briny. And so I think of a briny as being a green color.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You were led by the word?
Led by the word for this painting.
That's interesting. Were you reading stuff at the same time?
No.
Was influencing you?
No. No, but Big Briny, I thought, that'd be a kind of a great title and a great color for.
So you were kind of led by the title.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the color followed.
Yeah.
And then the fifth painting is very yellow, and it's called Minus Tide.
And that was the first painting.
Okay.
Of the series.
Right. So this is very much, it looks like a collage in a way, because the cliffs at the bottom are sort of, you can see through them to the, you know, to the one below.
There is a little collage work in that. My palette that I was using in the studio was a large sheet of plastic, and I would mix my colors on the plastic and paint. And I painted on the floor. I had the canvases on the floor.
Okay.
They're not large paintings. They're 30 by 22 inches.
Mm-hmm. Why are you on the floor?
That's the way I work sometimes, or I work flat or on a table or against the wall for my larger paintings. I'll just lean a canvas, put them on a block, and lean mm-hmm. them against the wall.
Right. And there is collage in this? I mean,
yeah,
cutting out paper?
Because, I worked on that painting one day, and then the next morning I go out to the studio and I'm going to work on it, and I'm thinking about it, and I'm kind of picking at the leftover acrylic paint that was on the plastic from that painting that I mm-hmm. was doing, and it just pulled off into this beautiful sheet of mixed of colors that I had.
Oh, okay.
And I thought, well, I just put it back on the canvas. Yeah, it was like I say, these are all invented in several ways.
Was it sticky?
You put it on with an acrylic, the way adhesive, the a matte medium, I think is what even decoupage artists use, a matte medium to adhere paper to.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, and it was a natural medium to use because it was all acrylic, and it stuck, and I liked the looks of it, and some of it, a lot of it got painted over, but some still shows through.
Hmm. So this little break into landscape work, has it changed the way you think about your own work? Would you do more, do less?
I'm back to in the studio, and I'm working on several large abstracts right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it took me a while to show these paintings. I had them in the studio for well over a year and a half before I decided to show them.
Oh, okay.
I just wanted to live with them. And
yeah.
And then,
were there others that you edited out?
No.
This is it?
That was it. That was the five. That's the series.
So it's a very finite production in a sense.
Yeah, yeah. The first painting I told you about was the abstract work. I put that away.
Where did that go?
I started working on that again in the studio just not too long ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Give it another year or two.
So, yeah.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My first guest this week was Glenn Clevenger. His show, Five Invented Seascapes, is on now at Russo Lee Gallery through September the 1st. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Glenn.
Thank you, Joseph. It was great.
This is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My second guest this week is Anne Hamilton, a visual artist based in the Midwest. She's here for the opening of Habitus, which is at Centennial Mills in the Outdoor Pavilion, and it runs through September the 16th. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Anne.
Happy to be here.
You are sort of known as a fabric artist. This is an iteration. Habitus has been somewhere else, and you mm-hmm. did a special version of it for Portland. It's in what I'd call the old police horse paddock on NATO. So these are 12 circles of fabric that spin when you pull a bell ringer's rope. You can get under them. Mm-hmm. It makes a noise, like a squeeze box noise. They're very big, and you walk around on the sort of horse paddock dirt. Then at one end there is two really long tables. Each one has hundreds of pages of photocopied text taken from books you've read and photos as well, and people can take them home. So just tell us, how many times have you done Habitus, and what's the Portland version?
So Habitus initiated in as a collaboration with the Fabric Workshop and Museum in Philadelphia, and it was made for a pier, so also a water location, a river location that flows to the ocean. And the part of that installation that comes forward here are these circular spinning curtain shapes that both respond to and move in the wind and are also human propelled through chain ringing ropes, which are called sallies, and they have a kind of soft, almost like pom-pom like center for your hand. So you take that, it sort of you feel the texture of that in your hand. And when you pull, really with your full weight, they're weighted mechanisms, then you get this this oscillating up and down creates actually a continuous circular movement of these curtains. And so you really create air with that gesture. And there are a dozen of those that are set into the pavilion, at the center of which for Portland is a 1970s model of the city that's in miniature. So it creates a relationship between a model, which is a representation and also an aspiration, and a way to take a very global view of something. Think about the way in which ordinances and codes and regulations actually form sociability, and in relationship to the envelopment and kind of almost more singular quality of the surround of the cloth, which is actually of Tyvek. So it's got a beautiful hand the way it takes the air, but it's a very durable, kind of tough material.
Mm-hmm.
And related to housing.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you run it through the tumble dryer for a few weeks?
Well, at the fabric soft workshop, we washed it and dyed it and stained it. And although it's really very subtle, the color, it kind of has to do with a gray sky. But the kind of movement of that and the ebullience of that movement is then in contrast to the form of attention at the end, as you mentioned, with these long tables that are full of individual pages, which I call commonplace pages. A commonplace being a collection of texts that one might copy out or save from one's reading, but in this case is made collectively through a Tumblr site. So people can actually go on to the Tumblr site, Habitus, a commonplace, and actually submit something from their reading that is broadly associatively linked to ideas of shelter and home and sanctuary and a feeling of belonging, mm-hmm. which in an associative way link these different texts that are on the tables, and they're there to be taken. Donations for the pages can actually be made to Rebuild, which built the table through their education and certification program, and we're really grateful for their help. I think for Portland, I'm also something very unique about this site is the way it sits between this open pavilion sits next to a section of the city that has obviously gone through intense development. It's next to this very active railroad line and a very active river. And so this circular motion, which holds you in its kind of gigantic embrace, is held between these two linear motions. And I think it's kind of about your experience of the body really moving through and responding with different forms of attention to the qualities of those elements. The act of sitting last night at the kind of early opening, it was so gratifying for me to see everybody kind of elbow to elbow along the tables, reading and sharing these texts together. Because I think when we read and we find incredibly compelling fragments, you know, we're compelled to share them, to mm-hmm. want to read them out loud to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, there's a reading which is very silent and often solitary, then becomes social through this form, just as the pulling up and down and the sounding of the units for the curtains has a kind of sociability in the space. So, you turn through different ways of interacting with the elements.
Mm-hmm. I took pictures of some of the text to send to friends.
Yeah.
Because you want them to see what you're thinking and, whoa, look mm-hmm. at this. Mm-hmm. Some of the text, one of them is a 1908 photo of the riverfront in Portland. Another just says, write home. In order to write, you must fall in love with your own thoughts every time. That's by Ray Armantrout from Write Home. Are they Tumblr submissions, or is this your own reading?
It's a real combination. The Tumblr site is ongoing, so we hope for more submissions, and they will continue to be posted there. The studio back in Ohio where I work has taken submissions, but also it's a lot from research of everyone in the studio and all our friends. Mm-hmm. You know, asking friends to submit that we know are readers. So,
you know, the site is up for sale. The city owns it.
Yes.
Prosper Portland are selling it. It's probably like this week, they said the sale will go through. And I noticed Kimberly Brannan was there at the party. She's the head of Prosper Portland. Was there some kind of tie-in? You know, did the developer say, hey, let's get some cool art down here to get people interested?
No, there was no connection at all. I was here last summer for last year's iteration of Converge, and we were talking about possibly doing a larger kind of project this summer, and started thinking about what kind of sites would be interesting. It was really important to place things in public to make it visually accessible, even if you're not necessarily going with the intention to look at art somewhere. I love that it's visible for the joggers and people walking by. And we looked at several sites, and initially I was very interested in the interior of the building. It's beautiful light, and you know, of course, it has all the atmosphere, the history,
the flour
of
mill
production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the tall building with
next
the
door,
water
adjacent.
Tower. It's I've been inside. It's pretty tumble down. There's no way that they would let people in there.
Right. Yeah, I think that in the end it was also that the exterior was really more attractive in its kind of civic qualities. And also this piece, when we started talking about bringing this part of Habitus here, it's like it really needs the wind. And when it was very still last night because of the heat, but when the wind comes up, what happens is there's, for me, this beautiful interaction between its motion, the motion of weather, the motion of nature, and human action of work. And that those come into and hand off to each other when you're in there. You know, the up and down, the very mechanical motion versus this kind of turbulence. And that's, you know, to me, where the poetry of the work is.
You did a piece at the Armory in New York in the Drill Hall, which is huge, and it looked like long sheets of silk that people lay down under as it kind of billowed above them, and then huge swings that people, children were swinging on. There was a lot of space.
Yes.
And that kind of art, it reminds the Tate Modern does things like that. You take a huge industrial space and put something kind of playful in there, and lots of people show up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a different kind of art that's emerged, you know, in the last 10, 20 years?
Well, I think installation, you know, work that's very kind of site, I would call maybe responsive to architectural context and social context, is, you know, not new. But I think that there's a lot of interest and concern with how accessibility, how work is accessible, and how it invites people into it. And that's not necessarily about entertainment, but it's about really generosity. And, you know, I think that in the case of, you know, my experience working at the Armory, it's a vast space. It's the size of a complete city block in New York between Lexington and Park and two of the numbered streets. And it's a massive empty space, obviously, when there's not programming in there, a former drill hall. And, you know, it asks that question about what is civic space now? Where are those places we can gather? What are the forms in which we can be together? And these are just huge questions, obviously, for our culture right now. And so one of the things I was thinking a lot about is how do you make a place here for everyone to be alone and to be together at the same time? And so in the case of that, the giant swings, you know, they're giant just because they hang from such a height of 80 feet, so you're very low on the pendulum. But the whole system of the cloth that raised and lowered that you mentioned was, it's the turbulence and its action was a consequence of people swinging. So the whole thing is in motion as people are in reciprocal relation. And so, you know, there's both actual relations that are made and obviously metaphoric ones.
Mm-hmm. Just one last question. I grew up in England where there was always a piece on local news about bell ringers like every 6 months.
Yes.
And I never got to pull one of those fuzzy rope end things. Where did you get them?
So that's so interesting because it really is a strong British tradition. It's, those are called change ringing ropes and they're called sallies. And I did have the experience of a couple of times of visiting change ringing groups, and I was very moved by the sociability of it and the physicality of it, because everyone stands in a circle and they ring in sequence patterns of the bells, which make the compositions. And it's beautiful to stand in the circle with them, and this attention of watching and listening to each other in a group. And to me, it's like a beautiful metaphor
of
the work
it's
we need to do.
Metaphor, yeah.
And so it's not such a strong tradition, you know, in this country. I don't know if there's a bell tower here with change ringing, but when I first went to a rehearsal, a practice at a church in South Manhattan in New York City, I was like, I want to be part of this group. You know, it's such a moving thing, and to have opportunities for people to be and work together across all different, you know, individual differences is a powerful thing.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KB.